And a very good afternoon, just about. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday, March 27th, at least in California. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the East Coast. And welcome to Deering Life. David, how are you, my friend?
Thanks for the world clock. I'm doing well. Yeah.
And a world clock, sir. I have at least two separate cups of coffee going on right now, so I am ready to roll. Shout out to Anthony, by the way, our IT technician, who just came in and bought me a very, very strong coffee today. So I'm fairly buzzing as roll. It goes, right?
Yeah.
Not bad. We got some fun guests. So we had a lot of fun last week with the man Bela Fleck on the show. That was a really fun episode. And we've got a pretty packed couple of weeks, obviously today. And then let's talk about the next 2 weeks. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, next week we have Jerry Douglas coming on. You know, not a banjo player, but he uses our pro picks, finger picks, and but has been around a lot of banjo players through his career. So we're gonna have a good chat with him. That's gonna be fun.
Good chat into the mind of someone who's played with the best of them over the years. And then the week after, I think we have Evie Layden coming on. Yeah. Talk about some clawhammer jams.
Yep, that'll be fun too. She's been on once before, we'll get into clawhammer and how to do some jamming with clawhammer playing.
Very cool. And you've been working on a bit of a calendar project of late.
I have been, because as spring is rolling in, you know, it's festival season.
It's
kicking off, you know, the end of March festivals start rolling. And so we made a festival calendar, a festival and banjo camp calendar. So you can find something near you or just something that you've been looking to go to and see what's out there. There's a lot out there. So, on our website, you can go at the top navigation on the right. There's a thing that says lifestyle, and underneath there, you'll see festival and event calendar. Go in there and go check out, go get out there and see some live music. And there's a lot happening this year.
There certainly is. And one of the first festivals that we've got coming up that we'll be attending will be in about a month from now. And that's Merlfest out in North Carolina. And just to segue beautifully into that, our guest today will be at Merlfest as well. So we hope to see them in person there. We look forward to it. But what do you say we jump in and bring these boys in?
Let's do it.
All right, so you guys already probably know who they are, but our guests today are the finest Irish band in bluegrass, hailing all the way from Ireland, but now living in the U.S., Jig Jam continue to make waves with their energetic fusion of traditional Irish music and American traditional music, including bluegrass. And today we're going to talk about a number of different things, including their new album, Across the Pond. So without further ado, please welcome Jig Jam. There they are.
Hello. How's it going?
Hello.
Good. How are you doing, guys?
Not too bad, no.
I'm going to rearrange the screen here just a little bit. There we go. Let's have you on full. How are you? You guys are not in Ireland. You are in St. Louis right now.
In St. Louis at the moment, yeah. It's kind of a home away from home as such for most of us anyway.
Yeah.
So we're in Kevin's basement at the minute.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Nothing like a basement in St. Louis to be.
Yeah. I'm telling you. All sorts happen down here, I'd say.
Very good, very good. Well, we're excited to have you and get into some conversation. Really, really excited about the new album. This is what we do on Deering Live. We kick things off with a little tune, if you are so inclined to entertain the masses. Show them who you are.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Very good. So you kicked it off there with your version of Cluck Old Hen, a track that you have on your latest album, Across the Pond, right there?
Yeah, that was Cluck Old Hen. And then we did a jig called Monaghan Twig. So we put it into the generator in our heads, and it came out as Cluck Old Twig.
Track
name. Very creative.
Which is just genius, really, if you think about it. Very, very clever.
Very good. Yeah, all of y'all are, you know, the plane's so tight and rhythmically tight on out of all of your playing. It's fantastic. What made you decide to join those two tunes together, kind of?
That particular tune, the Monaghan Twig, is one that we've been playing for years. It's just a real banger, as we'd say. You know, it's one of the ones that I suppose is always popular in Irish sessions and stuff like that. And it's easy as well. I find sometimes the simpler tunes allows you a little bit more wiggle room to put stuff into them as regards variations,
right,
and things like that. And just as well, it's a drivey one to play live. We play a lot of kind of lively stuff when we're gigging and everything for festivals and things like that. And then I think the same goes for Cluck Old Hen. There's not many notes in it, so there's a little bit of scope for variation in that too. And then I think just putting the two together with an old time and an Irish tune, it's kind of just our little recipe, really, for putting tune sets together. We try to mix and match, whether it's a bluegrass tune, an Irish tune, or an old time tune, and just try and take both those genres and kind of mess with them a little bit, like playing them the way they should be a little bit, and playing them in our own way as well, you know. So, yeah.
I liked some of the harmonic the harmonic changes you're adding to that, like at the beginning of Cluck Old Hen there on the banjo, that strum that opens kind of gave like a breath to the tune at the beginning. It was nice. Do you play, when you're playing these tunes live, something like that, how much different improvisation is there versus when you're recording, and are there times when it gets into kind of more of an extended jam sort of thing, or is it generally kind of a similar format, you know,
it varies. So like if you take that one for an example, what we played there is close enough to what we recorded, but then there's improvisation in every instrument at certain times. So sometimes that can get longer depending on the crowd, if we think the crowd is into it. Sometimes depending on something as simple as the time we have left in a gig, might think we had to wrap it up a little bit quicker. But yeah, we do certainly have scope in certain parts of that set of tunes where, yeah, sometimes we might lose the run of ourselves altogether. But yeah, so it varies, really. It's the answer to that question.
Cool. And so you came out with a new full-length album, you know, this year, Across the Pond. Well, let's talk about kind of the song selection and kind of the getting into it. What was the idea, you know, before you started recording? What were you going for, and what was the general kind of idea of as this wasn't your first time, you know, putting on a record?
I think we've always been striving towards the Irish bluegrass crossover mix, and I suppose striving towards getting a full album that properly reflects that crossover, which I think we've gotten close to in years past with different albums. But I think this is definitely the closest we've got to, I suppose, the jig jam sound and what we want it to be. So as regards picking songs and tunes, what we did with that Cluck Old Twig set, the tune sets in Across the Pond all sort of have that, I wouldn't call it a format, but those influences behind it. We have a kind of a bucket of tunes that we would mess around with, and we like, whether it's coming from the bluegrass side of things, maybe Dahi might have something on the five string, or else Gavin might have a trad tune from Ireland on the tenor banjo. So again, sometimes we just mix and match as regards tunes, but songs, there were some songs already written that made sense to the team, and then a couple of songs, I suppose, were written with that team in mind to try and capture that crossover. Like, we're trying to always write as much as we can, but like, we've certainly written songs before that just, they might be a fine song, or they might be okay in that regard, but they mightn't just suit Jig Jam, or they mightn't suit the team that we were going for and across the pond. So I suppose the originals were all trying to fit that description.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what's the kind of, what is the songwriting process for the band? You know, does one person bring in a tune, or does a full ready tune, or is it somebody bring in an idea and then you kind of, you'll work it out together?
It's been varied as well. Like, there's either it could be full songs brought into the band nearly ready to go, or else sometimes it might just be a verse or a chorus, or even just a riff. And when it's brought into the band, everybody can kind of give their spake on what they think it should be or where it could go. But then, yeah, there are other times that, you know, I suppose the song comes in ready made. And even like, I know guys in the past have come out like in with songs and to kind of even have an idea for what each instrument should do, which makes it easier, you know, that we can just write, okay, roll in with that, and it mightn't need much work at all.
And does everybody bring in original tunes, or is there one of y'all kind of the main songwriter?
We all bring in original tunes. It's kind of just an open book, really, as regards we have a WhatsApp group that we send stuff into, and then it's just down to a selection process on what is going to make the cut or not, and what makes sense to the album, what the album needs, whether it needs a certain amount of fast songs, certain amount of slow songs, different keys, different topics, and we just try and whittle it down that we think that is going to, I suppose, benefit the album the best we can for what we're working with.
Super cool. I love it. We had this question here from Kelly. Time to Go Home is my absolute favorite track on the album. I'm curious to know why they decided to add The Robin on the album, as it's on another album of theirs as well. You want to speak a little bit to that one?
Yeah, that's me, I suppose.
sounds like you're taking them on most of
them. Yeah, I don't mean to, but those two songs, they're two of them that I wrote myself. Well, thanks for the Time to Go Home. Yeah, that's that was a song that was written as a closer to an album and as a closer to a gig, which we're doing live, the kind of final song before people actually go for the door and head home. It's a description of an Irish pub scene with a music session going on, and people are just singing their last song and after a great night, and they all head for the door. But to answer The Robin is the first song I ever wrote, personally. We brought it into the band, we recorded it, and I think we can all say, I think we murdered it a little bit in the last album. And it was one of those ones that always... you know, we always kind of looking back thinking, oh, I wish we did a better job on that or a different approach. And that was obviously one reason we wanted to do a better job on it, but also it fitted the team of Across the Pond. So it wasn't just random. So The Robin is, I suppose, it's about emigration and people leaving Ireland due to lack of work in different shapes and forms. And The Robin is a metaphor for that, really, that the Robin doesn't have these worries, these life worries of having to worry about getting work and employment. And I suppose I wrote that song just after college when a lot of my friends were going to Australia or America for jobs and things like that. So there's a little Robin that comes to the window that my dad feeds every day with a couple of porridge oats, Flavin's oats. And yeah, that's where that came from. So I think we just wanted to do that song justice, but as well as doing that, it fitted the vibe of the album as well. So
there's like 100 different segues I could go from here, but I'll go this one. Elizabeth Ward says, be honest, the addition of Kevin to The Robin put a shine on it that it didn't have before. I think there's some nodding going on there, so I think we can probably all agree. But Kevin, you're a newer addition to the band, and you know, you're holding the venue for the day here. At least for this small hour. Let's get into that a little bit. How did that all come about? I think, like you said, the last time we had you guys on was June of 2021. So there's a lot that's happened with you guys since then, including your location. So Kevin, talk to us a little bit about how you became involved and what that process was like.
I'll make a Spinal Tap reference. If you're familiar with the drummer saga in Spinal Tap, mm-hmm. similar thing in Jig Jam with the fiddle players.
Yeah, they're just spontaneously combusted.
Yeah. little green globules left on the chair and whatnot. I think it really comes down to the fact that the guys started coming over to St. Louis in 2016.
Yeah.
2016, and I would come down and like sound check the guys, and we knew each other, so that was already kind of established. And when there was a vacancy and they needed somebody, it was just kind of an easy, let's be honest, it was just kind of an easy choice, really, because I was here, they were in the city, and we were familiar with each other musically as well at that point. So I just needed to learn all their stuff, basically, which I guess I hadn't really, I was familiar with the band and the albums, but once I started learning the materials, like, whoa, these guys are the arrangements are very musical and interesting. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I got in, really.
Had you jammed at all? Like just kind of musically outside of like playing their music and just kind of.
I definitely got up a few times, like on the on the stage. Yeah. I think we might have had some late night sing songs and stuff like that.
And awesome. What's kind of your background, Kevin? Are you come from like the Irish fiddle background, or is it bluegrass or old time, or kind of a mishmash of all of that?
I grew up playing Irish music. I started with that. Okay. And I got very involved in the Irish music community. But just kind of being raised here in St. Louis, there's a lot of other types. There's a lot of music. It's a very musical city. So I've been exposed to bluegrass and old time and blue. There's a big blues scene here. And mm-hmm. And jazz is really big. So and country music. So I got into that when I was a teenager, it kind of broadened up a bit. But I would say I started with Irish music.
That's gotcha. Awesome.
Sorry, Def, go ahead.
Yeah. And so what was why did the band start coming over to St. Louis since 2016, specifically St. Louis? Not were you coming specifically there or just passing through on a tour?
I think it's your time to.
We got the recommendation from a friend of ours, a great tenor banjo player as well, called Pio Ryan. When we were touring over here first, he recommended the great Irish pub here in St. Louis, John D. McGurk's, to us. So we start gigging there, doing a little resident gig 2 weeks at a time or something like that. So it was nice to spend time in the one place over here as well, rather than traveling around all the time touring. So we got a bit of a base set up here, and we got involved with the music scene here as well, and got to know a lot of the people in the community as well. So it was very nice. So shout out to P. Ryan out there.
Yeah. I've read quite a lot about your affiliation with John D. McGurk's Irish Bar. I'm not familiar with it. Dave, I don't know whether you are or not, but it seems to be more than just an Irish bar. It seems to be like a pretty prominent fixture in that world. Is that fair to say, or like why that place? I guess is it just
No, it is. Yeah, the great thing about McGurk's is, and again, we didn't know this before we got there. So many kind of legendary Irish musicians have played there, and there's pictures of them all up over the walls. Mm-hmm. It's this random hidden gem that if you didn't hear of it, you suppose we didn't even know where St. Louis was. let alone McGurk's. But yeah, like the great Irish trad players like Joe Burke and Jackie Daly, Martin Hayes, people like this would have done their time in McGurk's. And yes, it's a bar and it's a bar gig, but there's something different about it. It's nearly like a, sometimes it can feel like a listening room. Sometimes it can feel like it can be like a rave at the weekends. You kind of get a bit of everything. But it's been a great chance for us to practice and get our new material down, because we just finished a residency there a few weeks ago. And, you know, just before we went on tour, we were able to play all our new stuff, you know, nearly every night of the week. So we didn't have to sit down in Kevin's basement and practice. We could just do it on a stage, which was nice, you know.
Probably a bit like you hear about stand-up comics, right? And they try new material, and they have this kind of one place that they always go to. Very informal, but it's a perfect opportunity to go live for the first time with stuff and maybe make adjustments, maybe tweak a few things here and there, engage, like, you know, like you say, real-time reactions rather than just being in that vacuum of like, say, in a basement and just maybe having a couple of people drop by for some opinions. But that's got to be quite helpful to have that kind of, you know, a 2-week stint of being able to do that. And then I guess the idea is then you can go off on tour for a couple of weeks maybe, and then come back and kind of repeat that process and just keep it dialed in without having to spend months and months and months on the road. Is that kind of what the idea is there?
Yeah, pretty much. It was a paycheck as well when we weren't on the road, and it's a great outlet to play anything. And again, we would play anything. We could play a full hour of jig jam stuff, and then we could end up just trying something completely bizarre just for the fun of it, you know? And that's the beauty of that kind of gig. And again, it's on that stage, I know, over the years where we've come up with little ideas and figuring stuff out, or maybe an old traditional song that someone might sing completely randomly on a Wednesday night and say, oh, that works. And it could end up in the jig jam set then, you know, when you do go on the road. So yeah, it's been great for that kind of thing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And then you had, I want to get into kind of the coming to America part in a little while here, but the other kind of big thing that's happened, you made your debut at the Opry not too long ago.
Gav, do you want to talk about that? I'm doing a lot of talking.
I want to know about it. And by the way, Gav, I think mom and dad and brothers are tuning in watching, so you watch your language, all right?
Yeah, we were lucky enough to make our debut at the Opry last March. Needless to say, it was an unforgettable experience. And then on the night, of course, you know, Steve Earle was there, and Garth Brooks and Trish Yearwood showed up afterwards just as we were finished playing. And yeah, it was really just amazing to get to play our music on a stage like that. Yeah. And we're actually just found out just 2 days ago that we're actually playing the Opry again next Wednesday, April. Nice. So the excitement is very high in the jig jam camp at the moment.
Yeah, congratulations. That's huge. We had the guys from Colton from Dead South on recently, and they played the Opry, and I think they were about to play the Opry, and they played the Ryman, and same idea, I guess, in as much as we always think of those venues as just they're playing quite specific music, but they seem to be opening up to more kind of non-traditional stuff as well, and trying to kind of, you know, expand the horizons, as it were. So I think I read that you got a standing ovation on your first appearance. So I assume it was pretty well received.
We did. Yes, so it's still a bit hard to believe.
I think they were stiff. They just wanted to stand up.
I'm sure it was because of the raw talent. Yeah. But how was it? I mean, you know, was it just like as exhilarating as it sounds? Were you surprised?
Oh yeah, the whole thing was a bit like a blur, like a dream. I don't know, when you try to prepare yourself for that, but when you stand into the circle and you look out to a full house, it was just, it take your breath away. And yeah, should stand an ovation was just the cherry on top. It was ridiculous. It's still kind of hard to believe. Yeah. You know, playing our own kind of stuff it's very cool.
It's an appreciation for just good musicianship, right? and just good music all in all. I don't think anyone who walks in there is probably like, I'm not going to like it because it isn't a particular genre or because it's not, doesn't fit a certain category. Like, I think just people just appreciate really good music these days.
Yeah. Well, like, I think if you do look at the opera, even next week, just looking at the lineup, it's still, it's very diverse. Like, there's a comedian on as well. Like, there's a Rhonda Vincent is there, like a pure legend of bluegrass. There's a couple of country guys. I think to have, and the fact that we have the bluegrass aspect obviously gets us, you know, on the horizon of the Opry, which is great, but we're very different too, you know? But we like to keep everything lighthearted and upbeat and lively. So, you know, no matter what the venue is, we don't get too serious about anything and people hopefully can enjoy themselves, you know, and that's the aim of our game anyway.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Dave, we're about the halfway point. Do we want to
hear some more music? Yeah, let's music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How we doing?
Time to go home. This is Time to Go Home that I think was Kevin.
Yeah, awesome.
So again, this is, we've been playing this as the last kind of song of the gigs on our tour lately. And it's the last track on the album. So it's, I'm gonna have to keep talking now before Dottie tunes up.
I'm just going into double C here for all the banjo players out there.
And yeah, this is a pub scene in Tullamore, where I'm from. And you can imagine an Irish session after going haywire for the whole night and fellas losing their minds. And all of a sudden there's one song left and this is kind of capturing that moment, so. All right. Good. One, two, three. It's a cold Friday night in the town I was born, and the wind and rain howl through the air. The sight in the snug is alive with a session and thrill for all who were there. Hearts are kept warm with the reels and the jinks, along with a drop of the pure. Photos of old lovely heroes are nailed to the wall, like old times before. It's time to go home, time to go home. Shake your hand and say your goodbye, it's time to go home. Johnny from town orders 10 pints of plain as his wife tries to drag him to bed. One more little sup, cries old Johnny, as he takes off into dancing instead. Fire crackles along like the curly red hair of the fiddler who sits by the door. Brownie lets off the green fields round for band as the Buckley twins, they shout for more. It's time to go home, time to go home. Shake your hands and say your goodbye, it's time to go home. One more song, what a sight to be seen. Tears in the eyes of our men as they rattle the walls with our rendezvous. Head for the door and onto the west windy streets of old Tullamore. Lights they go down, but the music and fire's alive, sighting out.
Yeah, really nice, really nice. I want to ask Dati about playing like a non-bluegrass sort of songwriter, playing behind, and, you know, what's your approach to playing to like a song, you know, not like a bluegrass song, tune, but just like a songwriter sort of tune like that? Because a lot of players get, a lot of five string banjo players are in that position where they're playing with songwriters and, you know, it's not necessarily a bluegrass scene. How do you kind of use your bluegrass technique to back up that song?
Yeah, that's a good question. For that particular song, I'm just trying to not get in the way, kind of, and just kind of be rippling in the background. So that song's in 3/4 as well. So I was just doing a basic backward roll, just a triplet thing. Just something like that, kind of simmering along in the background for the whole thing, and not doing anything too out there or fancy, and just trying to lock into the guitar really. Right. And yeah, for a lot of the slow songs and stuff like that, I'm basically going off kind of Jamie's guitar playing a good bit, trying to lock into that and not get too out there, too fancy or anything.
Mainly arpeggiate, you know, the chord changes through there. Yes. And then kind of find a color spot here and there when there's a chance.
Maybe. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and just be in a different register than maybe the mandolin or the fiddle.
Okay.
So just keep it down low or something like that. Yeah. Trial and error as well. See what works. The studio is great for that as well. If you have someone behind the desk and he's shouting at you saying, calm down in there.
Yeah, if you've been in the position where you've been playing too much, I mean.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, yeah. Definitely in the early days, just playing out over everything and showing off. But yeah, it's nice to just hold back and just sit back into it, into the background, and just have a more of a texture than anything running through it.
Yeah, there's no harm in just playing simply.
Absolutely, yeah. Easier said than done sometimes.
Totally. And what's for the record, what's kind of the recording process? How long did y'all go in to do this? Did you record it all in St. Louis? And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Do you want, Kevin? You're the microphone man.
Oh.
Here's the maestro.
Well, we recorded the album at a studio called Native Sound. That's run by a guy named David Beeman. And I'd say it was probably 2 weeks, no more than that, right?
Well, yeah, two stints.
There were two stints.
We had the first 5 tracks recorded. When was it? November?
In June.
Yeah.
Second one was in November.
Yeah.
We finished it in November then.
Yeah.
It was pretty quick as far as I'm like just a week or two, projects that I'm used to doing. It was pretty efficient, I would say. I mean, we got a lot for 2 weeks. That's pretty.
I think it was
doing a record in 8 days.
8 days total, I think,
you know.
Yeah, we still had our add-ins, like we a couple of extra days for harmonies, and you know, we sent it away for double bass to a guy in Knoxville. Daniel Kimbrough is his name. But other than that, yeah, it was fairly, we got the bones of it done in those 8 days. But as regards the process, yeah, we're kind of mainly just going in on our own. We tried to do a bit live, and then it was just quicker to go in individually. We'd start with guitar, then banjo, then mandolin and fiddle at the end. And yeah, try to get those bass things down. And then before we'd start on a main vocal, we'd throw a guide vocal down first and a guide guitar, and then we'd work off that.
And did you play to a click for those first few tracks?
Yeah, everything's to click.
Tried our best
to. Well, we tried our best to. The click was going on anyway, whether we were playing to it. Yeah, a couple of nudges here and there now, I'd say, around the click, but yeah. There was a click in our ears.
There's a question from Jackie Haran saying, I see Gavin changed instruments for Time to Go Home. Does he have a preference to banjo or mandolin? Amazing musician on both Big Jig Jam Band.
It just depends on the song, really. So a song like Time to Go Home is kind of a more mellow, subtle one. The mandolin just fits nicely in that. And then, as Dottie was saying, I was just trying to just compliment the song, really, and just not get in the way too much. And I suppose then I'd play the banjo more for tune sets, or we have a song, June Apple, where there's the two banjos going on. So generally we try and just like try and say if the five string might play a traditional Irish tune and like the tenor might play like a bluegrass tune, just to try and mix it up and show the capabilities of both instruments. And it's good fun trying to arrange that.
And how do you do the, when you have two banjos going on at the same time,
how do you put in earplugs?
Earplugs. I suppose you just try and arrange it in a way that's like somewhat
listenable.
I'll add that Mark James said, I had the pleasure of hearing Jig Jam live in Lancaster last Friday. It was a banjo extravaganza. Sorry to interrupt your question, Dave. Carry on.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to, following up on that question, outside of putting in earplugs, like what is the balance there? Because you're playing a tenor and a five string, right? So they're a little different kind of frequency wise, but they're still banjos. So what is the balance there?
It depends on the tunes as well. Like some of the tunes that we play, we might have the tenor banjo playing in the regular style with the flat pick, and then usually on the five string, I'd probably go up an octave, maybe just to have a different texture going on above it, rather than getting in the way of it, or trying to have it in a rolling pattern as well, rather than just a single string kind of way. So this still sound a bit different. Obviously they're different instruments as well, but so you can put them in left or right speaker as well, and they have this different kind of texture going on, maybe up an octave and more cascading kind of effect on the five string, and then the single string thing with the tenor banjo. So sometimes it takes a while to figure that out sometimes, but I think that tends to work on a lot of the Irish tunes and stuff like that.
Plus we use the fiddle to our advantage there. Like the great thing about having Kevin in the band is we have fiddle on everything. And it's the only instrument that we have now that has sustain.
It's not too plucky.
It's not plucky, you know, like everything else. And I think the fiddle can kind of mask over the plonkiness of banjos to make it work. And likewise, in the, even you talk about the slower songs, I think since Kevin is playing fiddle on all the songs now, it allows the two boys here to take probably a back seat as regards having to do as much, because the fiddle is like your kind of lead guitar player in a rock band. You know, it's doing your melodies and your sustainy stuff that's a lot more pleasant in that kind of slower style songs, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you go live, you're playing something like the Opry, it's still just the four of you, right? You're not taking out kind of backing musicians or anything like that. So it's just literally the four piece.
Yeah. Now we do have two little live tricks as well. I have an octave pickup on my guitar, which is this fella here. And I have two inputs.
Oh.
Just there like that now.
It's not a guitar show, but now I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, people always ask, they don't know where the bass is coming from. And a good few of the Irish players do it. So I run an extra pickup through an octave pedal, which brings it down to sound like a bass guitar. And then we also have a stomp box. So those are the kind of live low end.
So you're completely splitting that signal out into two separate things rather than just running the main one single signal through an octave pedal.
Yeah. So I have two channels for the guitar setup.
Yeah. That's very cool.
And how do you filter out just that string? How do you, that low string?
So I have it over the bottom two So the A and the E string, and again, I literally just plug this into an amp and fiddle with it, that I can get it at an angle that doesn't affect the D string too much, and just gets these two. So I play in standard. So some people that do it in drop D or Dagdad, they might only need the bottom string, but I kind of need two. And then I keep a finger going on either of those through every chord so I can create a bass line. So I just had to adapt and use different shapes. But again, it's manageable, you know?
Right. So the pickup is just that the bass pickup is just the underneath those two strings.
Just those two strings, yeah. Right. And again, I might have it on until, you know, certain parts of tunes and songs, and then I just toggle on the pedal and then it'll go straight down.
Bluegrass disco.
That's cool. And on the banjos, are we doing anything? Is that kind of the only pedals that we're using in the band, or are you using any effects on the banjos or the fiddle or anything like that?
Oh, I've got a little. I've got one of those TC pedals that when you press on it, it makes weird sounds.
So, I like the technical terms. You just kind of fiddle with it and it just makes weird sounds, and that's
that's exactly it. So I just kind of pop that in at appropriate moments, if there's some sort of crescendo or if we really want to make a lot of noise, basically a cacophony. A moment, but only a moment or two. But for the most part, all the instruments are pretty direct. I think even on the album, I mean, you're just hearing the sounds of the instruments on with mics in front. I mean, there's not a lot of processing or anything like that,
which I think is cool. I do. On the whole, I think that's great. I mean, it's good. You seem to be using those kinds of things just to add a bit more kind of texture rather than to create a stylistic sound per se. The essence of the band is still like very much an acoustic kind of organic sound, which is I think part of the appeal, especially these days, it seems like.
Very cool
Dave, sorry,
what about on the banjos? What's the pickups y'all are using?
I think I have the Fishman Rare Art.
Okay.
And then I go through one of those Grace Alix designs. Okay.
And I actually use the same Fishman Rare to pick up and then go through a Grace Design DI. Okay.
Cool.
Do the job.
Yeah.
Just coming back into the album just a little bit. It's called Across the Pond, and I'm curious on a few fronts here. I read about the title being really just kind of about Irish immigrants coming to the US and settling and kind of more paying homage to that. But then it's at a time in your guys' career when you've kind of done the same thing. And so I'm curious, like, how does that history kind of play into your understanding and you know, the crossover that you've made coming to the States?
Anyone want to take that?
Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah. Jamie's got it.
So obviously there's certain songs that describe the Irish immigrants years ago. Like, we did a job on the city of Chicago that describes the people coming over in 1847. But I think what Across the Pond, really, I don't think it's time specific, because the Irish people keep on coming over here to the States, and they will continue to keep coming over here. So I suppose it's not a historical thing. I think it can be both historical and very much present at the same time, because I think, Kevin, what's that now? Is that your waterworks?
Yes.
That's St. Louis for you folks.
Yeah.
I thought it was in the factory, but it's not.
Yeah. So yeah, there's no particular timeline on it. I think it just describes Irish people coming over to the States, and I suppose not just coming over, it's what they're bringing with them, and what they bring with them, how has that affected American culture and Irish culture? So that's when you look into the history lesson of bluegrass music and how bluegrass music isn't that particularly old. And when bluegrass started with Bill Monroe, the influences of Irish people already settled here in the States those influences with their culture and their songs and their tunes, they are deeply reflected in bluegrass music and what you hear today in traditional bluegrass music. And the same as American folk music or old time or whatever you want to look at, that full umbrella of genres, you can hear the Irish influence on all of them. So it's obviously still evolving, and there's bands, you know, doing it still today, whether it's traditional bluegrass or more progressive stuff, you can still hear those Irish influences. So that's kind of what Across the Pond means. And I know that 50 years down the line, they're still going to be coming across the pond, and God knows what they'll bring the next time in 50 years. I don't know, but there'll be an Irish influence over here in some shape or form, you know?
I completely agree. That is definitely the truth. This is the first time you guys have actually lived here in the US, though, right? I mean, you've been coming across for years, but Dave's coming back, by the way. He just dropped out temporarily. What's it like living here? Your residence at this point. Has there been anything, and I can talk to this as an Englishman coming over to California after 30 years, like it's a bit of a culture shock sometimes. Have there been anything that you've had to get used to that you weren't expecting? You know, difference between essentially being a touring band versus an actual part of the community?
Yeah. You want to shout, boys?
I would say personally that I didn't find that much of a culture shock, really. Because I think it's the circles you hang around in as well. So if you're just immersed with fellow musicians, you kind of feel like you have a lot in common and you fit in. Obviously, there's small cultural differences, but yeah, generally, I didn't really feel that too much. I'm not sure how the lads feel about it, but
yeah, I'd be a little bit on the other side of things, that culturally, I would find it different, but not in a bad way, yeah. Do you know? But again, I would agree with Gavin. If you're hanging around with musicians and like-minded people, it definitely feels a lot more. I just think more about the Irish culture being probably more unique as a very small-knit community at home. Mm-hmm. Things like that, that sometimes I don't think you get in a big country like this.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's the expanse of the geography as well out here.
It's just massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you people who don't live here or haven't spent a whole lot of time here just can't kind of wrap their heads around it at all. It's and it's very different as you go across the country as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think as well, like, we've been touring in the States since like 2015 and quite a lot. So at this point, we're kind of so used to being in America that that's also probably why it didn't feel like a shock to me.
Yeah.
But I suppose if we rewind back to when I first
came. Oh, yeah, sorry, I was going from the start. Oh, yeah. Minute. I'm very used to it now.
But I think the first time coming here fresh off the boat, yeah, it was a big shock.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's what the question was.
Yeah, it's also, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a culture shock being in this basement at the minute, Kevin.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to let us leave.
No, the door's already locked.
Yeah. It's cozy down
here. It's pretty cozy. Yeah. I'm happy as I are here.
Yeah.
So festival season's upon us. We're going to see you guys at Melfest. Any particular festivals you're looking forward to playing this year?
Merlefest, yeah. Delfest is another one.
Oh, good. Excellent.
We're playing... what's the one?
Vancouver Island.
Vancouver Island Music Fest. Mendocino Music Festival, potentially. Yeah. It's in Mendocino, California.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Bear Creek in Northern Alberta, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at a few of the Irish folk fests as well around the Midwest that would always be a regular staple in our summer tours. So,
yeah, got a couple of guys in the chat who remember you from when you did the Huddersfield show at Eagle Music a few years back. It's been a long time since I saw them in Huddersfield at the Eagle Deering Banjo Day, and we had a great workshop on tenor banjo from Gavin. Are they likely to tour the UK anytime soon? I think we've had a couple of other people asking similar questions. So spill the beans. Are you going to be around the UK, Ireland area, Europe?
We'll certainly be playing in Ireland as much as we possibly can, but I suppose with fellas over here in the States, it's not as easy to line up UK tours or European stuff, but that's not saying we won't in the future. I wouldn't say it'll be in this calendar year, but potentially 2025, you know, we have our UK agent who's always contacting us about different things and potential opportunities. So, yeah, we won't rule it out. We just don't have anything set in stone at the moment.
It's all good. I'm sure you'll be the first to announce it as it comes around.
So, absolutely.
Dave, you're back.
Yeah. We have a couple other questions in here. Elizabeth Walsh is saying, what's the set list for next week? Who are they looking forward to this time?
I think she's referring to the Opry show, I think.
Yeah, I think the Opry show.
Oh, yeah. We haven't decided on that just yet. We have three songs, but we're open to suggestions if the Jig Jam fans want to send us their thoughts. We'd love to hear them.
Drop them in the comments. What songs do you want to hear? Nice.
We've got another question from Victor C. He's wondering about how was your St. Paddy's Day celebration?
It's great, yeah. It's definitely a little bit different than other years. We did a matinee show in Northampton, Massachusetts, which was a nice, cool little venue called Bombix. And then we finished off in a place in Cape Cod that night. So we did a little double gig that day. We kept ourselves busy. It's the one day a year we can get away with doing two gigs. I don't think anyone else would have us for two gigs any other time of year.
I don't know. I think so. Michael is asking, when will Ryan O'Reilly officially join the band?
Yeah, we missed that.
Works.
Yeah, we'll see him next week in Nashville. So I'm not sure Ryan O'Reilly's a hockey player that was the captain of the St. Louis team here. And we got friendly with him over the years, and he's currently playing with the Nashville Predators. So we'll see him at the Opry next week. So maybe he'll jump up for a belt of a song. Who knows?
Nice.
With the Preds, huh?
Preds, cool. Yeah.
Excellent. And Kelly is suggesting Chicken Talk at the Opry. Please, that's the question.
Get Connor back in the band.
All right, gentlemen. Any final thoughts, words of wisdom? And then I've got a request that you might want to play out with.
Yeah, we're playing Friday in Off-Broadway here in St. Louis. That's a plug for that. It's nearly sold out. Yes. Looking forward to it.
Where can people find you? Let's talk about that.
We're in Kevin's basement.
Yes. Yeah. Come on down.
Send a search party.
We're making pizza tonight. So.
Yeah. Jigjam.ie is the website. And then our social media handle is Jigjam Live.
Man.
Covers it all.
It's like I had that queued up. Perfect. Go check them out. And the new album is on all the normal platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, and all that kind of good stuff. I think you said iTunes there. That's showing my age just a little bit.
Yeah, it's
terrible. I have you on my iPod Nano. And One thing I did just before we wrap up, you had Becky Bueller on the album as well, didn't you?
Yeah, she did. She sang on the City of Chicago.
Which is a great song in and of itself, but how was that and how did that come about? Because she's cool. She's good friends of ours.
Yeah, she's a friend of ours that we met at a few festivals over the years. And I suppose we were open to collaborating with, again, we didn't have any plan. And then we waited until we recorded stuff and they were like, well, what does any particular track need anything? And we hadn't put harmony on the City of Chicago. And Kevin's voice just wasn't cutting it for the same, you know. So we needed a bluegrass female in there. Yeah. I know. We just thought it'd be nice to have a female vocal mixed in. I think it's nice in general, no matter what the song is. But that particular song, we thought it might be a nice avenue to go down. And we thought about who we could ask. And Becky was top of the list because we had just seen her a few weeks before that. So we sent her a text and she was all up for it. So, yeah, it was great to have her on.
Were you able to do that in person or was that kind of a send the track and have her do it wherever she was at?
It was send the track. She recorded it with Stephen Moogan, who's Sam Bush's guitar player. He has a studio. And it was done yet remotely down there. But the next time we share the bill on a festival lineup with Becky, I'd imagine we'll team up and sing it live as well. So
oh, that'll be a treat. That'd be really cool. Yep. And she's normally at IBMA. And I think you guys quite often come down to IBMA in September as well. So, we'll be at Millfest in the vendor tent right towards the backstage area of the main stage. So do you make a promise right here, right now, to drop by and say hi?
Promise. Yes. Promise.
There you go. You heard it there, Dave.
Yeah, promise. I heard it. Right.
Excellent stuff. Well, we've got one request. Kelly is asking, any chance we can get the lads to play June Apple?
Ah,
there we go.
Well, we weren't going to play this one, but we're supposed to play it. Yeah, this was the plan.
That was the plan all along. Okay. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much for your time today. That was awesome. Really, really fun, as always. Wishing you the very, very best with the album, with everything you're doing this year, this summer. And thank you everyone for tuning in, whether it's live now or later on the replay. Enjoy Jig Jam on the way out. Thanks guys.
So much. Thanks, man. Just do the same as we've been doing it. The same tune as we've been doing recently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the same tune we've been doing recently. Yeah.
So I don't think Kevin heard the other plan.
Okay.
Yeah. So same as we did. Yeah. Same tune as we've done
rehearsal.
Recently. Don't overthink it, Kevin. Whatever comes out of your fingers.
Guarantee it won't.
All right. All right, well, one, two, three. Well, I wish I were June Apple hanging on a tree. Every time a true love pass, think about me, think about me, think about me.